Douglas, congratulations on being part of the Roll of Honour. I want to start by just putting something to you that one of your colleagues in this list said earlier today. He said, of course, commercial radio really didn't get its act together until Douglas MacArthur arrived. So tell us about the beginning of the RAB and the impact that you were able to make.
Well, I think the answer is marketing. It's the 80s were an audience success for commercial radio. The number of hours to sell doubled. The share of ad revenue was static at 2%. Now that's called a disaster. Normally when marketing a medium, more audience means more money. And I think, not to be particularly critical of people, there was lots of selling going on in radio, but no marketing. And I mean, I'll tell you one example. So before starting the RAB, I interviewed lots of people in ad agencies. And I asked them what they thought the weekly audience was for commercial radio. Now, the answer then was 23 million. The average answer of all these really professional senior people in media agencies and ad agencies, the average was 12. So what you needed to do was to educate them, which is different from selling. To educate them about the benefits of radio and the power of radio. And that's what... It still needs selling, so I'm not just meaning that, but you actually needed educational marketing to get people to see the value of it.
Because people used to say at the time, it's the 2% medium, we'll never get it above that. But you, from the outset, thought that that number could be raised.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I did a deal with the six groups that started the REB that if... I'm not sure if I'd say this actually, but if I could double the revenue in 3 years, they'd pay me all my salary again, and they did.
Which so was, I was probably cheap at the
so
price.
It was. Other people made a lot more than me.
So how did you go about changing the agency's understanding, not just of the numbers, but of the kind of audience that commercial radio could bring
them?
I
think the key thing is getting on their side. So that the staff of the initial staff, there were seven in the beginning, because there wasn't an awful lot of money, and only one of them was a radio person. The rest of them were media people, mainly from agencies that were interested in radio, or some not interested, they just joined because they thought it was an interesting idea. And so they were kind of on the agency's side, so they were able to be helpers. I mean, at the very beginning, we had three people who did nothing but plan radio schedules for agencies. We told them what to buy, because they either didn't know how to do it or couldn't be bothered. See, a salesman can't do that. You can't go on their side. That's the key difference, that we got on their side, they trusted us. I mean, it's bizarre, really, because we were funded entirely by the radio industry, but the perception was that we were one of them.
Somebody else who we talked to today said, it's such a shame that once the agencies understood that we could give them an audience and that it was useful, they were only really able to understand the young audience. And they've never managed to get their heads around the fact that you've got these quite high-spending, middle-aged, even almost kind of to elderly people who you could advertise stuff at. And you still hear this a lot, don't you? People say, well, this is commercial radio's big problem, that it can't persuade the agencies, that it's got older listeners and that they have any value. Is that ever going to be cracked?
I don't know. I mean, I think the REB may be potentially at fault for that, because, basically we accentuate the positives. And if you ITV's really old. ITV's much older than commercial radio. So we would argue that you would have mixed schedules of ITV and commercial radio and extend your reach to young people. And the thing is, I think what you've got to remember about the people that buy media, a marketing director, an FMCG, I've been a marketing director for an FMCG company, advertising is maybe at most 10% of what they do. Media is maybe 1 or 2% of that. It's 2% of the 10, so you're down to 2% of his time. And the choice between radio and outdoor or something is down to almost nothing. So actually, if you're going to attract these people's attention, you've actually got to be pretty single-minded. And the youth thing was the easy thing to push the button on.
What's the balance, do you think, between spot ads and S&P, and how has that changed, and how is it likely to change if it is?
I think that editorial linked paid for communication, and I call it that because it's across all media now. If you have done work for many media owners in many sectors, and I mean the national press, you know, most of its revenue is still the equivalent of spots, it's ads. But the stuff where it really makes its money, and more importantly, the stuff where it really interests the advertiser, is when you do ads, spots, and you link it in with some other audience engagement thing. And, you know, now there's an online version of it and so on and so on. But it can only grow, is the answer.
Yeah. And do you think that all radio advertising really has to be multi-platform? It's got to work online and, you know, in all sorts of ways. It can't just work as a piece of audio on a radio station.
It depends on the comms communications planner and the agency, because some of them would like the work done for them, and they'd like a medium to do it all for them, to do the kind of multimedia thing. Some of them would want to do it themselves. They want to be the chefs. So they want to, I'll use radio spots for that, I'll use outdoor for this, so we'll do that. So that, I think you've got to have it all on offer, and you've got to have bright people in the radio station to try and sell those packages to people. But some people will want it straight and some people won't.
I wonder what you think of the idea that I've heard, which is brands are now so interested in content that they're going to start thinking, well, why would I want to buy spots in someone else's content? Why don't I just own the content myself? And the example that's given of this is Coca-Cola FM in Latin America.
Yeah.
Can you see that as being a trend that UK commercial radio's got to be aware of?
I'm not sure. It's a trend that lots of marketing directors talk about. But the problem is the numbers are really quite inconsequential. You know, Procter & Gamble, who I used to work for a long time ago, is, you know, spending lots of money doing TV shows on YouTube for mothers to sell Pampers and things. But you look at the audience of the YouTube, and then the audience of the sports they put in the middle of the equivalent of Coronation Street throughout the world, and the YouTube audience is trivial, absolutely trivial. I've always thought that media is a fashion medium. I mean, it's not entirely rational. I mean, I'm a sort of mathematician, a physicist from university, but so I'm good at numbers and stuff. But actually, what we tried to do in the REB was to make radio fashionable in agencies with sufficient rational underpinning that people could defend it. You know, people, when a client says, well, why do you want to use that? You need a couple of good answers. And like one of the answers might have been, they've got lots of young people, you know, or hopefully a number in it. But there's a gigantic fashion for online video at the moment. It's very expensive. The numbers are not very big, but everybody's piling into it because it's fashionable.
The story, certainly of the last 10 years in UK commercial radio, has been consolidation. That's normally attributed to a desire to make UK commercial radio more attractive to national advertisers. Hmm. From your perspective, has that been the right way to go, and is it working?
Actually, the real answer is I don't really know. I've not done... I mean, it's 7 years now since I left the REB, and I've not done one day's work in radio, so I don't know. I mean, I can see the intellectual argument for it, but against that, you know, prior to the REB, about 10 years before, I worked with Jimmy at Radio Clyde, and I was a sales and marketing director for 18 months, and there you can really see the power of real local radio as well.
Let me put that question to you in a slightly different way then, which is, how important was it in your time at the RAB that you made commercial radio more attractive to national brands, possibly even at the expense of the local advertisers that had been the backbone of LR?
That's definitely the case. The revenue growth that was generated during the time that the RAB well, I was involved in it for, it's a long time, it's 14 years, I mean, hell of a long time. The revenue growth was, everyone thinks it was all national. Actually, it was two-thirds national and one-third local, because local, you know, and radio gets more popular and more sexy and more fashionable, everybody piles in. And the main role that we played in terms of building the national was to make it really easy for people to buy lots of local radio stations and think of it as a national buy. Now, nowadays, people are doing that through branding, you know, the whole station. But what we were doing it about, firstly, doing the tedious work for them, and secondly, you know, making arguments to why, you know, the audience you'd get across this group of stations.